You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
This is God's plan for redemption, and it's good news.
Welcome to the Religious Liberty Report, a weekly news briefing on religious liberty news, a program hoping to educate, encourage, support, and equip you, our listeners, on important issues of our day, but always approaching the issues from a biblical worldview.
You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report. Alexander Alfano reporting in this last week of 2024. As we approach the new year, I thank you for the honor of addressing you on the report. For me, an inspiration to bring you this weekly report, reminding you that the church is called to be the moral, the cultural conscience of the nation. Brothers and sisters, we must not stay on the sidelines and let the culture just do its own thing. The Religious Liberty Report hopes to help equip you with tools to take your faith to the culture, and so that we may better understand and articulate our Christian worldview in a way that is courteous, kind, yet bold, uncompromising, and committed to God's Word as our guide. I remind you that the idea is not to win debates, theological debates, but to win hearts, minds, and souls. The Religious Liberty Report, on the air, working to keep America open to God's truth. Because, brothers and sisters, without freedom of conscience, we have no other liberties. Working to help equip churches and believers on how to remain faithful to our mission in a culture that too often disagrees with our message. Turning to page one on the report this last week of 2024. Reminding you that it's later than you think. The older we get, the faster it seems that time passes. That's not a good thing. Because we know that the destination of this journey is hurtling faster and faster and faster towards us. If only we could slow life down. A study in 2005 found that most people over the age of 40 are too aware of this acceleration of time, while those under age 40 don't necessarily feel the acceleration of time. They call it the holiday paradox, a phenomenon. Our perception of time is dependent upon the number of new experiences that are recorded in our brains. You see, if it's a routine or regular experience, it doesn't get encoded in our brain as a memory in quite the same way. In one movie, they're referred to as core memories. Only core memories really are even ever remembered. It's called the holiday paradox because the more new experiences that you will have on a vacation, on a holiday, the longer that holiday seems to have lasted when reflected upon retrospectively. In our youth, everything was new. Life was full of wonderment and novelty. So it's been encoded in our long-term memory. But flash forward 40 years, and as you come and go from your daily routine of coming and going, and nothing seems to be new under the sun anymore. So what happens is that there's no long-term encodings. Retrospectively, looking back, the passage of time from age 40 to 50 seems to have been so short, and from 50 to 60 even shorter. It's all passing, it seems, like a snap of your fingers. So what can we, what could we do about this accelerating passage of time? Some scientists are researching this, and they've come up with a theory that if we would place giant magnets in space and aim them down toward the Earth, it would somehow slow the rotation of the planet, doubling the time it takes for us to make an entire rotation. In other words, a day would feel like 48 hours. Unfortunately, researchers have realized that this would drastically shorten our lifespans, which would make us lucky to reach the age of 40. There are also concerns that slowing the rotation of the planet in such a way might disrupt the migration patterns and the tides. So they're not going to do it. They've decided against it. Another proposal is to just fill our lives with more memories so that our days seem to last longer. We, therefore, would need more new experiences. C.S. Lewis referred to this as the law of undulation and the pursuit of novelty. He explained this in the Screwtape Letters. When a person who is riding the peak of the wave, he has falsely accepted that this state of emotion will last forever, and they are inevitably going to be crushed when it begins to fade. It is the disappointment during this transition that the enemies of our souls hope to capitalize on. Consider marriage. Humans can be made to infer the false belief that the blend of affection, fear, and desire, which they call being in love, is the only thing that makes marriage either happy or holy. Well, this is a false belief. Many a marriage can be destroyed when these affections wane and the person thinks they are no longer in love. Equally dangerous can be the spiritual highs that often accompany conversion, spiritual retreats, as they can lead to doubts about salvation. It's during the time of discouragement in the pursuit of novelty that the enemy really starts to work. C.S. Lewis called it the horror of the same old thing. The horror of the same old thing is one of the most valuable possessions we have produced in the human heart. An endless source of heresies in religion, folly in counsel, infidelity in marriage, and inconstancy in friendship. We humans live in time and experience reality successively. To experience much of it, therefore, we must experience many different things. In other words, we must experience change. The undulation, the wave of change. But we mustn't confuse change with the pursuit of novelty, a craving for new things, a tightrope of sorts on which we must keep our balance. Balancing the normal seasons of change, changes in interests, emotions, affections, and the lie of replacing change with a false expectation of permanence, seeking novelty, seeking always a new high, avoiding the lows in life. We must learn that change is normal and become content with the normal flow of life and enjoying the many good things God has given us. Reminds me of a verse. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 11 and 12, where the Apostle Paul reminds Christians that While excelling in brotherly love, they are to, quote, aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs and to work with your own hands, as we instructed you, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one. I'm drawn to the exhortation to live quietly, avoiding this constant search for the next novelty, the next and new experience. You see, the Bible teaches us that Christian contentment is independent of my circumstances. Joy is something that is independent of the chances and the changes of our world. Until the Christian comes to understand that, he will be riding on a roller coaster, undulating, being blown about by the ever-changing winds. Our lives will continue to go this way until we realize that real Christian contentment is independent of circumstances. You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report, talking about Christian contentment. Christian contentment grounded in our union with Jesus. It is a relationship with Him that establishes the basis for Christian contentment. Christianity, contentment, and simple living. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10, we read, "Godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. If we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. We read that some people eager for money are wandering from the faith and are being pierced with many griefs. You could almost substitute the word money there for eager for novelty, new experiences, the highs avoiding the lows, the next adventure, the next experience. We read in Proverbs 19, verse 23, "The fear of the Lord leads to life. Then one rests content, untouched by trouble." In Romans chapter 12, verse 2, we read, "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will." Proverbs 14, verse 30. "A heart at peace gives life to the body." First John chapter 2, verses 15 through 17. "Do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in them. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever." 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 through 17, reminding us to not love the world's ways. Do not love the things of the world. It cancels out love for the Father. Practically everything that's going on in the world has to do with getting our own way, wanting things for ourselves, wanting to stand out, to be important. All this has nothing to do with the Father. It isolates us from Him. The world and all its wanting is on the way out. But whoever does what God wants is set for eternity. Luke chapter 12, verse 15. Then Jesus said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." Luke chapter 12, verse 15. And in Matthew chapter 6, verse 21, we read, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report, talking about Christianity, the Christian life, the simple life, contentedness, the pursuit of novelty, the law of undulation. Turning the page on the report in this last week of 2024. A fascinating article by John Horvat II called "The Problem is the Banana on the Wall," dated November 28, 2024. Everyone has an explanation for the turn of events recently in our country, in our economy, our culture. However, there's another explanation that sheds light on what has gone wrong in America, explaining something of the craziness of our times. I think the problem is the banana on the wall. Let me explain. The banana metaphor will help clarify some of the craziness of our times. You see, there was an auction in New York recently in which a renowned auction house, Sotheby's, sold a 2019 art piece called "Comedian" by Maurizio Cattelan. You see, the work consisted of a fresh banana taped with duct tape to the wall. The bidding started at $800,000, and within 5 minutes, the fresh banana duct taped to the wall sold for $5.2 million, plus auction house fees, bringing it to a total of $6.2 million. The new owner of this fresh banana taped to a wall is Chinese-born crypto businessman Justin Sun. You see, the actual banana cost just 35 cents when it was bought in the morning, that morning, at an Upper East Side fruit stand. The new owner, Justin Sun, will get a certificate of authenticity and installation instructions should he want to replace the banana before it rots. Mr. Sun, the buyer, the proud investor who auctioned and had the winning bid at this auction, has already announced that he will eat the original banana as part of this unique artistic experience, honoring its place in both art history and popular culture. One art dealer commented that the work is something of a historical importance that comes only once or twice a century. Brothers and sisters, something is profoundly wrong here. That's why I think the problem with our country is the banana on the wall. It's the elephant in the room that no one wants to see. We're living in a society where certain sectors inhabit an alternative reality, where 35-cent bananas are treated as multi-million dollar works of art. The problem is that they want to force you and me, they want to force everyone in society to believe this madness. It almost makes you want to cry out. It's not art, it's just a banana. Can't you see? But our society's insisting on the absurd. Absurdities. You can see it in our country, the clash of two mindsets, two worldviews. The first are those who do not want to see the absurdity of the banana on the wall. And they insist that it's art, creating their own reality and imposing it on the rest of us, on the nation. There's a second group, you see, that is tired of being told that a banana taped to a wall is art. This second group wants to live in a world where art is art, and bananas are bananas. This second group is saying, enough is enough. And the reaction is not just against this single banana on one wall. There's the banana that claims a man is a woman is a man. Other bananas claim that people can choose their pronouns, that we can have pornography in libraries and call it literature, or that it's okay for men to compete with women in sports. We're told that drag queen story hours are suitable for children and that after-school Satan clubs are part of education, and that it's not a human baby, just a clump of cells. It's all part of this vast banana conspiracy, an extravaganza we're being asked to admire and make believe that this is the blueprint for a dream society. But sensible people are questioning the real value of these bananas, and they're seeing the absurdity in our wayward culture. Our recent election reflects this as well. Many view it as an awakening of sorts. You see, when absurdities are enshrined in a culture, anything can happen. Truth is denied, morals are eroded, and a cult of ugliness reigns supreme. Cruel manifestations of intolerance and cancellation are possible because the absurd demands absolute acceptance. You cannot tolerate others calling a spade and denouncing the nonsense of the banana on the wall. The time has come for a return to order and sanity. It is long past time to take the bananas off the wall. You're tuned in to the Religious Liberty Report. In this last week of 2024, talking about bananas on walls. Turning the page yet again on the Religious Liberty Report this last week of 2024. Time passes. The year is passing. The older we get, the faster it seems that time passes, causing a certain amount of anxiety, maybe even fear of the future. because we know, we feel that we're on a runaway train that's hurtling faster and faster and faster into the future. If only we could slow it down. Merriam-Webster defines nostalgia as a pleasure and sadness that is caused by remembering something from the past and wishing that you could experience it again. While pleasure and sadness seem strange together, most of us understand what it is to feel nostalgia, a bittersweet aftertaste of life's foregone past. Nostalgia doesn't have to be bad. It can be a way to remember God's acts of deliverance, like the Exodus and the cross of Calvary. It can also be a way to escape the chaos of modern life and find moments of peace. But nostalgia can be dangerous. Our nostalgia can be spiritually dangerous. It can be a temptation to dwell on the past. It can make us ineffective in the present. It could also distort our perspective of God's purpose in our lives. One writer defines nostalgia as a temptress masquerading as fond remembrance. He describes it as an idolatrous lust for old satisfaction. Nostalgia, an empty feeling we get when we believe the lie that our greatest pleasures are in the past rather than in the future. Nostalgia in and of itself is a longing emotion. And this is not sinful, because no emotion on its own is sinful. But nostalgia can tempt us to dwell in the past and make us ineffective in the present. Paul did not waste time reliving the good old days. Rather, he said, "One thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining towards what is ahead, I press on toward the goal." Philippians chapter 3, verses 13 and 14. We too should engage the present and look forward to the future. We have a living hope and an inheritance that can never perish. So as we say goodbye to the old year and hello to the new, I remind you of two Bible verses that deal with change. The first one we recognize more readily, the second one less, but they help us to say goodbye to the old and hello to the new in our lives. The first verse, Romans 8, verse 28. We know that God works all things together for good, for the ones who love God, for those who are called according to His purpose. Romans 8, 28. And the second, 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 3. Go ahead and do what you are thinking to do, because the Lord is with you. 2 Samuel 7, verse 3. Lord, we look at the world around us and we thank you that your grace is still extended to sinners, that it's been extended to us. We ask that the light would shine again brightly in our world, that the people of the light would be faithful, and that we would be compassionate in extending the message of grace. We ask that you be glorified, Lord, by opening the hearts of sinners, shattering the darkness, bringing in the light. Signing off for 2024, Alexander Alfano on the Religious Liberty Report. God bless you, and God bless America.
Thank you for tuning in to the Religious Liberty Report, a broadcast intended to help equip churches and ministries